Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this state, Tuesday, January 19th, 2021. I hope you had a nice Martin Luther King Day. As always, we start our readings with some of the headlines from today, so let's get started. The first headline reads, Now Seating. And it's in big, bold, black letters, and there's a picture of a woman who looks like she's a part of wait staff, and she's in the middle of a restaurant. She's wearing a mask. Indoor dining. We'll be ready for patrons as region moves to Tier 1. This article is written by Deborah Pressey and is based out of Urbana. At Urbana Garden Family Restaurant, manager Vlora Salemi was just waiting on the official word that indoor dining was once again allowed before she began calling employees back to work. The announcement from the state finally arrived Monday. East Central Illinois' 21-county Region 6, which includes Champaign, Douglas, Ford, Piatt, and Vermilion counties, has met the requirements to exit Tier 3 COVID-19 restrictions, can skip past Tier 2 restrictions, and move straight to Tier 1, the Illinois Department of Public Health announced. Indoor service at bars and restaurants is allowed under Tier 1 with capacity limits. We will definitely go back to indoor dining. Really, as soon as we can get everybody back to work, we'll be ready, Salemi said. The state's announcement meant Urbana Garden could potentially be ready to reopen for indoor service as soon as today, Salemi said. Region 6 advanced from Tier 3 to Tier 1 after meeting the last remaining state requirement, COVID-19 hospitalizations declining for 7 out of the last 10 days. The region had already met the other requirements for test positivity rates and hospital bed capacity to Tier 3. Also ready to recall furloughed employees back to work was Biagi's Ristorante Italiano of Champaign. Manager Cassidy Hoke said Monday she was waiting on word from Biagi's corporate office and the governor's office to begin recalling employees. But the tables were ready and the restaurant was clean and ready to reopen for indoor service. We are just waiting for the step down and it's going to be a really fast turnaround, she said. Given the limited capacity, Hoke said she won't need to recall all Biagi's servers. But it will take some time to get employees back on the job, she said. So she anticipated reopening the indoor service on Thursday of this week. So that would be in two more days, the 21st of January. Based on daily phone calls from customers, Hoke and Salemi both know the public is ready to dine indoors again at their restaurants. Customers have called every day since Urbana Garden closed for indoor service, Salemi said. We're taking 30 to 40 calls a day, Hoke said. I think it's mostly people from out of town and wondering if we are open. Progressing to Tier 1 means restaurants and bars can be open from 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. and resume indoor service with limited capacity, which is the lesser of 25 guests or 25 people or 25% of the overall room capacity. While hospitalizations declined enough in Region 6 to move to Tier 1, deaths continued to rise Monday with 4 more COVID-19 deaths in Champaign County and 50 statewide. Champaign-Urbana Public Health District Administrator Julie Pride warned easing up on restrictions doesn't remove the threat of COVID-19. It does not mean anything has changed or anything is safer. It means we now have the hospital capacity at this moment, she said. With vaccinations well underway, Pride urged those who are at increased risk for the more serious effects of COVID-19 and those who are in contact with people at risk to consider refraining from taking advantage of the loosened restrictions for now and maintaining precautions. As of Monday, 12,321 Champaign County residents had been given the first dose of a COVID-19 vaccine, and 2,018 people had already gotten the second dose. Starting today, vaccinations are set to begin for people 65 to 74 with underlying health conditions. We will do another 5,000-6,000 vaccinations this week, Pride said. We just don't want people to put themselves at risk. We don't want people to put themselves at risk when we're so close to getting them vaccinated. Higher tiers of restrictions could also return quickly for Region 6 if there's a resurgence, she warned. It's important for everyone to continue wearing masks and taking other precautions, Pride urged. East Central Illinois' Region 6 and Northern Illinois Region 1 were the third and fourth of the state's 11 COVID-19 mitigation regions to move to Tier 1. With other tier changes Monday, five regions are now in Tier 2, which still prohibits indoor service at bars and restaurants. And two other regions were moved from Tier 1 to Phase 4 of the state's Restore Illinois plan, in which gatherings of up to 50 people are allowed. Helping more regions advance in tiers was a new hospital surge staffing problem, also announced by the state Monday. Under this program, hospitals with available rooms to expand their capacity, but without the staffing to open those rooms, will be able to partner with the state to get the staffing they need. By making surge staffing available, the state and hospital leaders are confident that metrics can safely move away from bed limits to move through mitigation tiers and allow more regions to advance according to the State Department of Public Health. And there's two large photographs, like I was saying. I told you about the waitress in the restaurant, and the caption under that reads, actually, manager Flora Salimi looks over the Urbana Garden dining room on Monday while making plans for a return to in-person dining. And that picture is provided to us by Robin Schultz of the News Gazette. And there's another photograph on the back page of the paper. There's two men sitting at a bar, and the caption reads, from left, Dave Jackson of St. Joseph, Chris Sturdivan of Homer, oh, and there's three, bartender Becky Chambliss, and owner, oh, I see all four of them now, and owner George Woodard on Monday, chat at Billy Bob's in Ogden, an hour after it was announced that Region 6 would go to Tier 1. So they're masked and talking to each other at a bar. And that, again, that photograph, again, is provided to us by Robin Schultz of the News Gazette. The next headline reads, Savoy 16, Theater Eyes Friday opening, aims for liquor license. This article is written by Ben Zigderman and is based out of Savoy. While Goodrich Quality Theaters was denied a liquor license in 2019 for Savoy 16, its new management team is hoping for better luck with Village trustees. Phoenix Theaters Entertainment, LLC, which is hoping to reopen the theater Friday, has been in discussion with Village staff about obtaining a liquor license, CEO Phil Zaccaretti said. Obviously, there's another theater down the street that does have a liquor license, he said, referring to AMC Champagne 13. A lot of theaters have gained that over the years, and we'd love to have that. The Village Board will discuss the matter at its meeting on Wednesday. It is incredibly preliminary, said Village President Joan Dykstra, who supports granting a liquor license to the theater. We need to get a sense from the board if they want to revisit the issue. The board previously denied a liquor license for Goodrich by a 4-2 vote, with some trustees concerned about alcohol affecting the theater's family atmosphere. AMC Champagne 13 has served alcohol since around 2012. We did some research and found no evidence that it caused any problems of any kind at AMC and Champagne, Dykstra said. So I support revisiting it. Zaccaretti said Phoenix has liquor licenses at several of its theaters across the country. We've never had an issue at any of our theaters, he said. It's a place where you come to watch a movie and maybe have a drink. It's not a place where you come to drink for 4 hours. With East Central Illinois moving to Tier 1, the theater hopes to reopen Friday for its first showings since March. It closed initially due to state COVID-19 restrictions and later for good after Goodrich Quality Theaters filed for bankruptcy. We've got a lot of work to do within the next 72 hours, Zaccaretti said. We should be ready by Friday. Knoxville, Tennessee-based Phoenix Theaters announced in December that it would take over the theater. Zaccaretti said the theater is waiting on health department inspections to determine whether it can open with prepared food. We have not had our health inspections yet, he said, but we would still be able to open with limited food items that have to be prepackaged. He also said the IMAX screen still needs to be serviced, so I'm not sure if that will be ready by Friday, but all the other screens will be, he said. Dykstra said she's excited for the theater to reopen. I'm just really looking forward to safely going to a movie, she said. Me too. And there's a photograph in the paper, and it's of a man and I think some staff in the background behind the kind of desk where you go and get food, concession stand. Kyle Tamburino, Wright, and Kurt Wagoner mopped the floor behind the concession counter at Savoy 16 on Monday. And that photo is provided to us by Robin Schultz of the News Gazette. The next headline reads, Illinois Impact. Next challenge for Region 6, get 7-day positivity rate under 6.5% for 3 days, hit same hospitalization metrics. Having made it to Tier 1 of the state's mitigation plan, Region 6 has one more rung to climb before returning to the way things were prior to November 20th, when Governor J.B. Pritzker announced tougher restrictions statewide. To advance to Phase 4, which allows for gatherings of up to 50 people, Region 6 must hit the same hospitalization metrics it did in the latest round and have a 7-day positivity rate of less than 6.5% for 3 straight days. Region 6's 7-day positivity rate is trending in the right direction, falling for 8 straight days from 9.9% to 6.7% during that stretch. Equally encouraging, it's now been a week since Champaign County's rate increased. Champaign County's pandemic death toll surpassed 100 on Monday, with CU Public Health reporting 4 more lives lost to COVID-19, 2 women in their 60s, a woman in her 70s, and a man in his 80s. With the first of 4 straight days of clinics set to start today, Champaign County's vaccination totals stand at 10,385. That's 4.9% of county residents for the first dose, and 2,025, that's 0.96% for both doses. And that information is provided to us by Jeff D'Alessio of the News Gazette. The next headline reads, Top of the Morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. For a few extra bucks and for a good cause, Doug Hageman asked for the Memorial Stadium fan cutouts he ordered for his kids to be autographed by Lovie Smith. Only one problem. Lovie got fired before he could sign anything. Bad timing, said Hageman, a rabid Illinois fan who teaches and coaches in the Leroy School District. As it is, it worked out well. Last week, the cutouts for Hageman's sons, Hayden, Ryan, and Robbie, came in the mail, all signed by new coach, Brett Bielema. That's Brett, B-R-E-T, and his last name is spelled B-I-E-L-E-M-A. The beaming boys took a picture with their special delivery before positioning each cutout in the window of their bedrooms, facing out. You drive by our house, Doug said, and you'll see them. Bielema's gesture wasn't necessary, but did add to an idea that led to family fun in the fall. Doug asked for the cutouts to be placed where he's had season tickets since 2006. During games, the Hagemans would pause TV when cameras panned the south end zone seats. We saw them a couple times, Doug said. Plus, the money spent went to the Bobby Roundtree Trust to help the injured Illini cover medical bills. It was a win-win situation made even better by Bielema's signature. The boys were pretty excited, said Doug, adding that Hayden, who turns 10 on Thursday, is convinced he'll one day play for the Illini. Our new coach has been active. Questions, comments, suggestions, email Jim Rosso at jrossow@newsgazette.com. And there's a nice photograph of the family in the paper. The caption is Hayden Hageman, Wright, and his twin brothers, Ryan and Robbie, with their autographed cutouts. And it's provided by the family. Sweet picture. The next headline reads, History, Area History. In 1921, Urbana police sought to intercept 2 boys who ransacked a store in St. Joseph the previous night, stealing more than $200 in goods, $2,700 in today's dollars. But the boys, traveling west in a Ford car, apparently turned around before entering Urbana. In 1971, a study by University of Illinois researchers showed that more young women were smoking than young men. In 2006, James Underdunk, a 16-year-old junior, was smoking a cigarette outside Champaign Central High School when he learned that his tobacco habit, if repeated in front of a cop, could soon result in a hefty fine. His immediate reaction was a profanity. "Kids are going to smoke anyway," Onderdonk said. "I don't understand. It'll just force me underground. I'll smoke in cars instead of outside." International history, today's highlight. On January 19, 1981, the United States and Iran signed an accord paving the way for the release of 52 Americans held hostage for more than 14 months. Also on this date in 1809, author, poet, and critic Edgar Allan Poe was born in Boston. In 1915, Germany carried out its first air raid on Britain during World War I as a pair of Zeppelins dropped bombs onto Great Yarmouth and King's Lynn in England. In 1937, millionaire Howard Hughes set a transcontinental air record by flying his monoplane from Los Angeles to Newark, New Jersey in 7 hours, 28 minutes, and 25 seconds. In 1955, a presidential news conference was filmed for television and newsreels for the first time with the permission of President Dwight D. Eisenhower. And in 2005, the American Cancer Society reported that cancer had passed heart disease as the top killer of Americans age 85 and younger. The next headline reads, "Coronavirus Pandemic, Deaths Rising in 30 U.S. States During Winter Surge." This article is written by David Crary and is based out of New York. He's an AP national writer. Coronavirus deaths are rising in nearly two-thirds of American states as a winter surge pushes the overall toll toward 400,000 amid warnings that a new, highly contagious variant is taking hold. As Americans observed a national holiday Monday, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo pleaded with federal authorities to curtail traveling from countries where new variants are spreading. Referring to new versions detected in Britain, South Africa, and Brazil, Cuomo said, "Stop those people from coming here. Why are you allowing people to fly into this country? And then it's too late." The U.S. government has already curbed travel from some of the places where the new variants are spreading, such as Britain and Brazil, and recently it announced that it would require proof of a negative COVID-19 test for anyone flying into the country. But the new variant seen in Britain is already spreading in the U.S., and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has warned that it will probably become the dominant version in the country by March. The CDC said the variant is about 50% more contagious than the virus that is causing the bulk of cases in the U.S. While the variant does not cause more severe illness, it can cause more hospitalizations and deaths, simply because it spreads more easily. In Britain, it has aggravated a severe outbreak that has swamped hospitals, and it has been blamed for sharp leaps in cases in some other European countries. As things stand, many U.S. states are already under tremendous strain. The 7-day rolling average of daily deaths is rising in 30 states and the District of Columbia, and on Monday, the U.S. death toll surpassed 398,000, according to data collected by Johns Hopkins University, by far the highest recorded death toll of any country in the world. Ellie Murray, an assistant professor of epidemiology at the Boston University School of Public Health, said cases have proliferated in part because of gatherings for Christmas and New Year and compounded previous surges from Thanksgiving and the return of students to schools and universities in the fall. The pace of any further spread will depend on whether those who did gather with family and friends quarantined afterward or went back to school or work in person, she said. One of the states hardest hit during the recent surge is Arizona, where the rolling average has risen over the past 2 weeks from about 90 deaths per day to about 160 per day on January 17th. It's kind of hard to imagine it getting a lot faster than it is right now, because it is transmitting really fast right now, said Dr. Joshua LaBear, director of the Biodesign Institute Research Center at Arizona State University. But there is some evidence that Thanksgiving didn't help things. Rural Yuma County, known as the winter lettuce capital of the U.S., is now one of the state's hotspots. Exhausted nurses there are now regularly sending COVID-19 patients on a long helicopter ride to hospitals in Phoenix when they don't have enough staff. The next headline reads, U.S. Census Bureau, director to resign after criticism over data. This article is written by Mike Schneider and is written by the Associated Press. Facing criticism that he is acceding to President Donald Trump's demand to produce citizenship information at the expense of data quality, U.S. Census Bureau Director Stephen Dillingham said Monday that he planned to resign with the change in presidential administrations. Dillingham said in a statement that he would resign on Wednesday, the day Trump leaves the White House and President-elect Joseph Biden takes office. Dillingham's term was supposed to be finished at the end of the year. The Census Bureau director's departure comes as the statistical agency is crunching the numbers for the 2020 census, which will be used to determine how many congressional seats and electoral college votes each state gets, as well as a distribution of $1.5 trillion in federal spending each year. In his statement, Dillingham said he had been considering retiring earlier, but he had been persuaded at the time to stick around. "But I must do now what I think is best," said Dillingham, 68. "Let me make it clear that under other circumstances, I would be honored to serve President-elect Biden just as I served the past five presidents." A Census Bureau spokesman said the agency's chief operating officer, Ron Jarman, will assume the director's duties. Jarman. He served in the same role before Dillingham became director 2 years ago. Last week, Democratic lawmakers called on Dillingham to resign after a watchdog agency said he had set a deadline that pressured statisticians to produce a report on the number of people in the U.S. illegally. A report by the Office of Inspector General said Bureau workers were under significant pressure from two Trump political appointees to figure out who is in the U.S. illegally using federal and state administrative records, and Dillingham had set a Friday deadline for Bureau statisticians to provide him a technical report on the effort. One whistleblower told the Office of Inspector General that the work was statistically indefensible, and others said they worried its release would tarnish the Census Bureau's reputation. After the release of the Inspector General's report, Dillingham ordered a halt to the efforts to produce data showing the citizenship status of every U.S. resident through administrative records. In Monday's statement, Dillingham said whistleblower concerns stem from what appeared to be misunderstandings about how the data would be reviewed and posted. "There has been no suggestion to me that the work described above posed any potential violation of laws, rules, or regulations," Dillingham said. Leaders of several civil rights groups last week called for Dillingham's resignation, and several Democratic lawmakers followed suit. Rather than ensure an accurate count, Dr. Dillingham appears to have acceded repeatedly to the Trump administration's brazen efforts to politicize the census, U.S. Representative Carolyn Maloney, chair of the House Committee on Oversight and Reform, said last Friday. The next headline reads, speakers call for nonviolence in turbulent times. This is written by the Associated Press and is based out of Atlanta. Speakers at the annual Martin Luther King Jr. holiday celebration in Atlanta called yesterday, for a renewed dedication to nonviolence following a turbulent year in which a deadly pandemic, protests over systemic racism, and a divisive election capped by an attack on the U.S. Capitol strain Americans' capacity for civility. This King holiday has not only come at a time of great peril and physical violence, it has also come during a time of violence in our speech, what we say and how we say it, said the Reverend Bernice King, the slain civil rights leader's daughter. It is frankly out of control, and we are causing too much harm to one another. The coronavirus pandemic forced the annual King Day service at Atlanta's Ebenezer Baptist Church online during the 35th celebration of his birthday as a national holiday. His family was among a sparse group wearing masks and sitting far apart amid mostly empty pews as others delivered remarks remotely. Bernice King said the toll of the pandemic lingering outrage over killings of unarmed Black people, and the deadly siege in Washington by supporters of President Donald Trump all underscore an urgent need to pursue what her father called the beloved community, a world in which conflict is solved nonviolently and compassion dictates policy. She quoted her father's words from more than 50 years ago. There is such a thing as being too late. We still have a choice today, nonviolent coexistence or violent co-annihilation, Bernice King said, again reciting the words of her father. This may well be mankind's last chance to choose between chaos and community. The ceremony included pre-recorded remarks by President-elect Joe Biden, who called sensing the civil rights leader's restless spirit during a visit to the National Civil Rights Museum, housed at the Tennessee Motel, where he was fatally shot outside his room. We must not rest. It's our responsibility to come together, all Americans, to bring peace to that restless spirit, Biden said. That's our charge in the days ahead. That's the charge in the years ahead. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated on April 4, 1968, while supporting striking sanitation workers in Memphis, Tennessee. Had he lived, he would have turned 92 on his birthday last Friday. The next headline reads, Ask the Admin, a daily question for Champaign-Urbana Public Health District's Julie Pride. In light of the directive to not form groups and to practice social distancing, I'm puzzled at how the Urbana School District can begin in-house instruction during the second semester of the 2021 school year. The person-to-person contact, especially with young children, seems to be an extremely dangerous situation during the COVID-19 crisis. I would not allow my children to attend any form of in-house grouping until there is a clearer picture of downward trends and mass vaccinations for the local community. How is this possible? That's the question. Here's the answer. Schools that can maintain adequate spacing, or at least 6 feet during between desks, and have everyone wearing masks can prevent outbreaks and transmission. This requires a great deal of work on the part of schools, but it can be done safely. And this is also happening in the Unit 4 schools this week in Champaign as well. Have a question for Julie Pride? Email it to news@newsgazette.com. The next headline reads, Oh, Snowy Night. A light snow is illuminated at the Kirby Wellness Walk at Allerton Park and Retreat Center on Sunday night. And this is a caption under a photo. This photo was taken at one of the entrances to the formal gardens area of the park. The Wellness Walk is open from 5 to 9 p.m. each evening through January 31st. Reservations are needed and can be made at allerton.illinois.edu. It's a nice photograph of a statue for the walk. The next headline reads, which is also a photo, a smoky entrance. There's a man in a yellow jacket walking outside. Behind a fence, and the caption reads, A Tolono Maintenance Department employee walks past a burned-out excavator at East Main and Washington Streets in Tolono on Monday. And that photograph is taken by Robin Schultz of the News Gazette. And also, Wednesday on WDWS 1400 AM, at 10 a.m., columnist Jim Dye visits with host Brian Barnhart on A Penny for Your Thoughts. That's just a brief announcement of what's to come. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, January 19th, 2021. I hope you had a good Martin Luther King Day. Thank you very much for letting me read with you today. I'll be back shortly with part two of the News Gazette, so please stay with us. Thanks very much for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful day.